Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White.
And this is Sam Dalton.
And we are here again to, as I just told Sam, we have an idea. We're going to chew on it and see what comes out.
See what happens. I have a cold, so that's why my voice is like 5 octaves lower. There's not a man.
Okay. I literally saw you last night, though, and I don't feel like you had a cold last night.
Yeah, I know. We went to dinner and I was fine. And then I woke up this morning and I was like, what is happening? So
who knows? I'm with a toddler, probably just a walking incubator.
We had a delicious dinner last night.
We did.
That was a great suggestion. Did you bring that home for Mike?
I did.
She got the ragu?
No, I got short rib on fat noodles.
Oh, that's so good. That's what it was. It looked delicious. Yeah. I got the burger. Mm-hmm. Had provolone, onion jam, arugula, and something else on it.
Best fries ever.
Oh, the truffle fries are incredible. I was really sad when they put the plate down and I remembered I ordered the side salad.
Instead of – we got fries for an appetizer. And then, you were like, maybe not doing double fries.
And then he put the plate down and I was like, I should have done double fries. Like, I don't know what I was thinking, but, you learn for next time.
Yeah.
So, and this dinner also spawned, we were talking about, because we knew we needed to record today, and we were kind of going back and forth on all types of different topics. And then we were like, we really haven't done a deep dive on anxiety. Like, anxiety, 30,000 foot view. Like, as a whole.
Which is funny because, we've done
– everything else?
Well, we've done, a hurricane episode.
We talked to you about how to cope with environmental hurricanes. Disasters. But we haven't just been like, hey, are you anxious? Yeah. No.
So, probably a good idea to have in the roster.
Yeah. So, with that said, if we're talking about anxiety, I think this is, if I had to pick one kind of mental health issue diagnosis that I would feel comfortable talking to anybody about, it's this one.
Yeah.
Because everybody is hardwired to experience anxiety.
Yep.
Right? It is a survival mechanism in your brain. And we could get into that more in a minute. But with this high-level view, everybody is hardwired to experience anxiety. Not everybody is hardwired to experience really any other type of diagnosis, right? Depression or bipolar or psychosis or anything like that, right? Those are – something has literally gone wrong with the functioning of your brain. Mm-hmm. With anxiety, we all have it. Mm-hmm. Some of us, the system in our brain gets hijacked and it ends up feeling more intense than what people would experience at a baseline.
Well, I think it's interesting because anxiety is sort of the only emotion and disorder that both exist, which I think speaks to what you're saying, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, we all feel sad and you could say depressed, but we don't all have depression. Where anxiety, it's like everyone can feel anxiety, but that doesn't mean you have generalized anxiety disorder or another, right? There are other types of anxiety disorders, but mostly when people are saying I have anxiety or an anxiety disorder, they're talking about GAD, which is generalized anxiety disorder.
The difference between the two, just saying oh, I've had a stressful week, I'm feeling a little anxious versus GAD. We'll just call it that.
Yep.
For the sake of ease. GAD. The difference between the two is the persistence and the impact on day-to-day function. So when we talk about day-to-day function, we are talking about work, school, personal life, relationships, ability to engage in day-to-day tasks that are necessary to function, such as cleaning your house, doing your groceries, paying your bills, just those things that feel very rote but can become hijacked very quickly by anxiety. So what that would look like is you feel that your anxiousness is impacting all of those facets of your life, right? So for example, if you are having a stressful time at work and you feel anxious at work, but you go home and things feel good at home, you will notice that your anxiety will sometimes dissipate if it is situationally related. If you have GAD, you will probably have that same level of anxiety carry over through all facets of your life, meaning there's no break, there's really no differentiation, it feels like it's always on your mind, you're always experiencing the physical sensations that accompany anxiety, right? So that would be, it could be all of these or a mix of these. You have headache, you have dry mouth, you have
high heart rate, difficulty swallowing, pressure, it feels like on your chest.
Yep. Difficulty breathing, you know, butterflies in the stomach, and even more than butterflies, like the knot in your stomach, right? Like it feels like your stomach's flipping all the time. Yeah. Bowel issues, tingling like in the muscles and the legs, if you have like the foot bounce going on, right? All of those or some of them would be present with you most of the day. And then it would impact your ability to sleep at night. And then it impacts your motivation throughout the day to do things, or it feels like you can't focus on things, or it makes you feel kind of paranoid in some of your friendships, your relationships, you're questioning things, you're overanalyzing things. So when we talk about GAD, we are talking about it has infiltrated all areas of your life.
And I think what's hard too is that a lot of times other disorders, and if you haven't listened to our episode on self-diagnosis, it's a really good place to to listen to, because we expand on this idea. But what's hard about anxiety is it's a feature of a lot of other mental health issues. So it is very hard to – maybe not very hard, but it is difficult sometimes to separate between, because if someone has trauma, they're going to experience anxiety. If someone is depressed, a lot of times they will – a lot of times depression and anxiety can create cycles together, because anxiety is so – physically draining on your body, a lot of times you end up like crashing. And this is distinct from bipolar. This is not mania.
Yeah, this is not a mood disorder.
Yeah, but it's like the physical sensation of, especially if you're not sleeping, if you're jittery, if you're overworking, overdoing things, not resting, your body will like crash, and then you will feel depressed. You'll sleep a lot. It'll be harder to get out of bed. You may eat more if you were struggling to eat when you were anxious. And then people can very easily fall into these patterns of like over-functioning and under-functioning. And that's something I see a lot with people. I've experienced a lot. You kind of get stuck because you know that this you know, when you crash and you under-function, then you're behind on your work or you're behind on things. So then when you are feeling more energetic, you want to max out that, get as much done, do as much as you can, all of that stuff. And then the crash comes and the cycle continues.
Yeah. What does the DSM say? Isn't it like present for 6 months?
I think so.
Like when we're kind of talking about this daily intrusion and feeling like it's dictating your life.
Yeah. Cause yeah, it's a long time.
It's a long time. And that, those timelines, which are present in all diagnoses, that helps distinguish between, is this just situationally based, like you're going through something difficult in life that very understandably you've developed kind of this coping system to get through, or are we talking about something that is now biological, right? Something that might need the assistance of medications or more intensive therapies and treatments. It's not just as simple as like, I had a couple bad days, or even I had a bad month, and I now have generalized anxiety disorder, which I, like, even as a therapist, I am very hesitant to immediately diagnose a client with something.
Yeah.
Unless they are coming to me having previously worked with someone you know, they've moved or that therapist was no longer taking clients or like whatever the situation is. And they come to me and say, here's the symptoms that I have. Here's the medications that I'm on. Right. Then when I know they've already kind of filtered through another professional, that's when I'm like, okay, yeah, we can just start from this baseline.
Yeah.
When I just get a new client that is coming to me saying, I've been feeling really anxious, more often than not, when I look through their history and what they're dealing with, I'm like, yeah, like
yeah.
You should feel anxious right now.
Yeah.
And that is almost a healthy response at times when there's a lot of upheaval and change and uncertainty in life. And the reason I bring that up is to say, when describing anxiety with some clients, I describe it as it's a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. Like I think some people feel really overwhelmed, especially like my high achievers, my oldest daughters, like the ones that really want to do it right. They carry a lot of shame that they're having these symptoms and they don't like it because it's uncomfortable. It's not fun.
Yeah.
You don't feel like yourself, but also to validate, like you're allowed to go through seasons in your life where that happens, where you're struggling with that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we now have a formal diagnosis moving forward. Does it start to, with, you know, therapy or with medications or with processing and coping differently, does the magnitude of the symptoms kind of fall back as you start to lean into coping with it differently?
I think what's hard too is, right, like there are things in our life that we're in a people for 6 months. And then, right, is it situational? Is it not? And I think for me, what goes back to again is like, I don't really care that much. I mean, obviously, if someone wants a diagnosis, I'm happy to provide that and support them in that. But I think if you're experiencing very difficult anxiety for 6 months, it is going to really impact your life. And there are things to do and to talk about it. And whether you want to label yourself as having that or not is obviously up to you. But yeah, it's, I think it is, I can imagine people who are listening are like, well, it's been really hard.
Yeah.
The past few years and like the situation, right?
Yeah.
Of COVID, of right, post COVID, of this, you know, the current political climate we're in. And it is really hard to tease it apart. And that's where I would say, if you want to say you have general, like if you think that, that is totally fine.
Yeah.
And you may not forever. And even if you have generalized anxiety disorder, it doesn't mean for the rest of your life.
No.
You can get into, you know, it's a little interesting talking about it as recovery or not. But yeah, with therapy, with potentially meds, there's a lot you can do to feel better and to be functioning well in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I often think as someone I definitely have generalized anxiety disorder and I've had it for a long time. It's helpful for me because a lot of times when I work with clients, there's a conversation about I need to eliminate my anxiety. I need to eradicate it. Mm. I need it to just go away. And it is a lot more helpful and empowering to be like, how are we going to manage this? How are we going to accept that you may always have a baseline level of anxiety? Some of us are just more hardwired to be anxious than other people. And what can we do to help?
No, I love that because part of why I brought up what I brought up, and hopefully if you listen to this, you didn't feel like I was telling you like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, no, absolutely. If this is impacting you, yes, come to us. The reason I brought that up is I kind of try to take the approach of what you said of like the radical acceptance of it, right?
Yeah.
The radical acceptance of the fact that this is how we're feeling. This is how we're managing something, or this is how our body chooses to respond to some of these situations. And instead of putting all of the energy in, how do I not feel this way? How do I not do this? How do I avoid this? How do I, right? Like, because all of that energy is wasted energy.
It makes it worse a lot of times. It is like the more you fight your anxiety, the more you fight, especially if you're someone who has like intrusive, anxious thoughts, right? About what, you know, what happens if I don't know, fall down the stairs and break my neck? What happens if I get fired? What happens if my friend doesn't like me and they don't tell me? Like, what if, what if, what if, what if? Then getting mad at that thought actually makes that thought stronger. And that's not just a concept or an idea. Like there is a, you know, you can't, like thought stopping doesn't work in terms of like they've done research on it and things like that. It can work temporarily for some people. But to give an example, I mean, try not to think about a white polar bear.
Right.
Like sit here right now and try.
Don't think about
it. It's really hard. Right.
Don't
exactly.
Stop thinking about it. Stop thinking about the fact that we just told you to think about a white polar bear. Don't think about it. You're thinking about a white polar bear.
Because your brain has to do something. Your brain has to check to make sure you're not thinking about it. And when it checks to not think about it, it's thinking about it. And that's the problem.
Correct. So leaning into a space of, okay, I feel this way. You're also building like a tolerance to the discomfort.
Yes.
And a key indicator as well is tolerating is not avoiding.
Yes. And tolerating isn't wallowing.
Correct.
Either.
And it's not minimizing.
Yeah.
I think some people think when it's like, well, why would I build up, you know, resistance to this thing that I don't like?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what we're actually doing in that is we're minimizing its power over us.
Yes, yes.
That's what we're minimizing. We're not minimizing your experience or the external factors that have caused you to feel that way or the internal struggles that you have. We are minimizing the negative controlling impact that it has on our life. Yeah. When we spend time sitting with those thoughts and realizing like, oh my gosh, like the sun still came up today, even though I had some of these distressing thoughts that were present in my mind. And so to practice building up strength to that gives you more energy to coping skills and different ways of thinking and mindset reframes and, you know, different ways of physically coping that allow you to actually live with this in a way that feels productive to you. Mm-hmm. As opposed to feeling like you are under this thumb that you can never get out of.
Yeah. I think it's also anxiety is so fascinating too because of its overlap with OCD and with how they both kind of start with a lot of times an intrusive thought, a worry that our brain reacts poorly to. And obviously OCD is a much more severe version of what people experience with anxiety, but there is a lot of overlap. And it's been something I've been like looking at in my own life a lot too. Like a lot of my personal recovery involved working on my anxiety and then also, you know, in therapy after I was in recovery, continuing to work on that. So a lot of that was like acceptance and commitment therapy, which is what we're talking about. How do you accept your thoughts? A huge thing that changed my life was realizing that my baseline wasn't supposed to be happiness.
Ooh.
I think a lot of people think anxiety, depression, all these things are external. And if I just got rid of them, my baseline would just be joy and happiness. And I remember when I was in yoga teacher training, there was like, we would do these, you know, dumb inspirational like quotes and we would share about them and stuff in yoga teacher training. And one of them was like, it was like a very also remember when Pinterest came out.
Oh, Lord.
And Pinterest was really popular in like, you know, 2010 and beyond.
To like 16.
Well, it was very into quotes. Yes. And remember when Instagram started transitioning from photos a little bit, it was very about inspirational quotes. And there was a quote that had a picture of a really smiley, joyful, happy kid on a swing. And the quote was like, never forget your natural state is joy.
Oh, good God.
And I remember seeing that photo and seeing that quote and being like, oh my God, yes, this is what I'm meant to be. Like we all just have to tap into our inner joyful child and, you know, like access it. And that's not the case. And I struggled for a while and my life changed when one of my favorite books is called The Happiness Trap by Russ Harris. And he talks about like the evolutionary psychology and he talks about how your brain evolutionarily doesn't give a crap.
No.
Whether you're happy or not. In fact, evolutionarily, it was like more advantageous for people to be worried about things. Because if you look into the woods and there is leaves rustling and it's not a snake and you were worried about it, nothing happens. If it was a snake and you weren't paying attention, that could be the end of your life. So evolution really doesn't care.
No. Evolution is hardwired to keep you alive for correct. As long as possible. That is the
even
whole...
if you're miserable the whole time.
It doesn't care.
Yeah.
It is going to keep you alive, and it is designed to do so. It's the same thing of like anytime a threat comes up, that is what fight or flight is.
Yeah.
Fight or flight is choosing, am I going to fight this threat? Mm-hmm. Am I going to flee from this threat? Am I going to stand still and play dead in front of this threat? Or am I going to, what's the other one?
Fawn.
Fawn.
Right. That is more in terms of in modern world, because it's like people pleasing and yeah. saying everything's okay and stuff like that, which didn't really exist as much evolutionarily, because you can't yeah. fawn to a lion.
Are you mad at me?
Well, you can't be like, oh, yeah, I'll definitely do whatever you say, lion.
One of the most like devastating realizations I ever made is that I'm a fawner. Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time assuming I was a fighter.
Mm.
I'm not a fighter. I'm not.
I just think it's hard because I think that I think the situation really matters. You know, I think the context does really matter. But that doesn't surprise me, Sam, because of how you were raised. I don't know how you wouldn't have become a fawner.
That's so validating. Thank you.
I mean, you were raised in the Mormon church. Like,
and I hate every minute of it. Why, God? Anyway.
Well, you're going to have to tell us what Sam told me last night, that she's gonna talk to someone.
Oh, you guys, if you want to talk about anxiety. So in the Mormon church, there's missionaries. I'm sure some of you may have even like seen them or had them come to your house before. And they're basically kids aged like 18, 19, men or women, and boys or girls, I guess. And their job is to either convert, you know, new members, or they follow up with the members that are considered, quote unquote, less active, mm-hmm. or such as myself, inactive, which means I have not been to church in a very, very long time. And so I forgot that when I moved out here, my records got transferred to the ward that I'm in.
That is so – without you doing anything, they just – how do they have your address?
Well, so, okay, it's kind of my fault because okay. they bug you. They, okay. like, crawl up your rectum.
They're like, what's your address?
And literally. You just kind
of give it to them.
The ward – because the ward in Utah was trying to get me to, like, have a calling and do things and be involved. Yeah. And I was like, listen, I've moved.
Yes, yes.
And they're like, oh, well, where have you moved to?
Got it.
And I was like, I moved to Florida. Here's my address. Leave me alone. Yeah. And then they gave it to the new ward. And so they've like reached out a couple times and they're very nice. And I've just kind of like let it be. But then now the other day I was in the store and the missionaries called me. And they're like, hey, Sister Dalton, like, we were just wondering.
I can't get over that because that it's sister.
I know.
I'm if it sister. Was, if you just say brother, if it was, a, yeah, if you're so a like, man, they say brother.
Yeah. So for my dad, it's like, Brother Dalton. So for me, they're like, hi, Sister Dalton. So
it just sounds like a nun. I can't I get over it.
Well, that's how I feel. And so, yeah, they're like, we would love to come like share a spiritual thought with you. And I don't know what overcame me. I was like, you know what? Come on over. Like, come yeah. here. And I think because Kendra and I were talking about on the way home last night, because my sister came to dinner with us and she was like, why are you letting them in the house?
Yeah.
And I said, I feel like there's this part of me that wants, and this is probably like my anxiety about mm-hmm. all of this, I want them to see like, no, I'm okay.
Yeah.
Because I remember growing up, there was this thought around like people who have either left the church or they're not yes. active in the church, that like their life is a disaster.
It's just so funny because that's so similar to 12 steps. I'm yeah. not knocking anyone who's in 12 step programs or anything like that. I had a good experience for a very long time. But it is so interesting how these very intense groups.
Yes.
It's like anyone who leaves is not okay.
Yeah. Like it has to be like so problematic in your life. Yeah. It has to be such a disaster. So they are coming over on Friday at noon. And you best believe this house is going to be looking freaking fire.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to – I think it's going to be kind of like a powerful moment for me to be like, mm-hmm. I'm done.
Yeah.
Like – and I have no ill will. Like I don't mm-hmm. hate you. You're doing your job. You're doing what you believe. But I'm doing what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I will report back.
Yeah.
And let you know how it happens.
I think that's so interesting. I think it's powerful to like – to I don't know, like create a – an ending or kind of draw your line in the sand and be clear rather than you know, just like not running away, but I think there's something powerful to endings.
Absolutely. Well, and I think actually with the anxiety, as I kind of sit in the space and I go back to the moment where they called me, I was actually surprised because I wasn't anxious.
Mm.
I actually felt like very calm, and yeah. I actually made that choice in a, I think, a very aware space.
Yeah.
Of like, no, like come over. Like I think when I say aware, I knew what I was inviting in.
Yeah.
Like I know that they're going to like question and kind of push a little bit, and they're going to share their testimony with me and tell me like how amazing the church has been in their life. And I'm going to be like, listen, son, I know more than
you. I mean, I think it's just hard when they're like 18.
They are.
And you're 35 and you're just like.
I'm going to be like, listen.
Yeah.
Listen.
I'm so glad your 18-year-old life is so great. If and you know so much outside of the church that you have such a unique perspective.
Depending on how they respond, I might be like, if I had made different choices in my life, I could be your mom.
Yeah.
Like, that's a humbling space to be. I would have been like an aggressive, you know, teen mom,
mm-hmm.
like in the heat of being a teen mom. But like, no, that could be, that technically yeah. could be my son. And I'm going to be like, listen, I've lived more lives than you. I know more mm-hmm. than you. And there's a really good chance you're going to be sitting in my space when you're 35. So, but probably not because you're a guy.
Yeah, that's true.
And this whole system is built for you.
Yeah.
So in relation to like the happiness thing, one of my professors in grad school had the most amazing activity for us to mm-hmm. kind of show like the varying levels mm. of human emotion. And so he had these five horizontal mm-hmm. lines that were numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One was mm-hmm. on the bottom, 5 was on the top. And he said, most human beings are going to bounce between 2 to 4.
Mm.
And he said, occasionally they will hit a 1 if mm-hmm. we're talking about grief or something incredibly tragic or an accident or something mm-hmm. happens. And they will eventually bop back up
mm-hmm.
to about a 3 after time, processing, you know, life moves on, whatever. He says, and every human will have opportunities to hit a 5.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, 5 is like your dream vacation, your wedding, mm-hmm. the birth of your child, like these huge, big moments mm-hmm. that are just so powerful and so all-encompassing. Mm-hmm. But he goes, eventually you will come back down.
Mm-hmm.
And that resonated with me so much even back then. And I've shared that with so many of my clients because it shows you like nothing – good or bad, no matter how far on the opposite end of the spectrum you get with either of those, is permanent. There is no state of happiness that is permanent. There is no state of sadness that is permanent. And I think to allow yourself the fluidity to surrender to the fact that it is an undulating wave
mm-hmm.
of how you feel,
mm-hmm.
life starts to feel more manageable. Because you're helping to minimize the shame that you feel
mm.
when you are below a 3.
Yeah.
Or for some families, like the pressure to always be okay and everything's fine, right? That yeah. you admit like, I'm not a 5 today, I'm a 4.
Yeah.
Like in some dynamics, like that's a really radical thing because in so many families, avoidance is key. And mm-hmm. people that lean into avoidance tend to lean onto the, oh, things are fine, things are happy, things are whatever. So in either direction, it's very radical to admit, no, like mm-hmm. I either am okay or I'm not okay, or I know I will be okay, or I know eventually I will go through something difficult mm-hmm. and trying, right? So that was just like a really helpful visual for mm-hmm. me personally, and I think with my clients.
I love that, Sam, because it also just reminds me so much of thinking about addiction. And it's right. just like, right, addiction is trying to chase the fives.
Yes.
And it's like you're using manufactured sort of things to chase the fives. And then the problem with that is, like you said, we all come back down. No one can yep. stay, even with chemical help.
Yes.
You cannot stay. What your brain does to adapt is it just makes the high less intense. It just – homeostasis works. It raises the level and it raises your tolerance for your baseline, right? That is like the thing about humans that is like the best and the worst thing about us is we're just unbelievably adaptable.
Yeah.
Which is amazing because we can be very resilient. We can go through things. I think about even like my mom when she was diagnosed with cancer this year and I didn't know, you know, how much longer she had. I was like, I'm not going to survive. Like this will be the end of me. I won't be able to live. And I remember talking to like one of my friends whose mom has died and like asking, you know, I was just like, how do you live day to day? And she was just like, you just do. You just adapt. And it's like, I'm not saying I want anyone to have to go through that or we should be grateful for, you know, the difficulties or things like that. I just think it is such an interesting testament to human beings of almost everything probably anyone who has listened to or anyone who's listening has gone through. They probably have had moments of being like, I could never do that. I won't survive that. And you do. And it is just so fascinating how, you know, we really are built for a variety of experiences your brain wants you to have natural ups and downs because it wants to keep you around that baseline.
Right. We're malleable. We're elastic. And I, you know, when people in the hospital would die.
Yeah.
And I would be like helping their families. So many people would be like, I don't know what to do. Right. Like, what do I do? What do I do?
Yeah.
And I literally would tell them like, you are going to get up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you're going to deal with whatever comes. And you don't even have to worry about the next day.
Yeah.
You just have to get up tomorrow and make decisions tomorrow. I've witnessed some incredible feats of human resilience. Something that I've held myself accountable to through that experience is if those people can get through that, if they can find a way to get through that and get through those moments, I can get through today. And I think sometimes it feels weird to find inspiration in that space. Like even you know, like reaching out to your friend and being like, how do you live without your parent? Like, how do you do that? Because it's a space that when you are, you know, privileged enough to have parents who have been mostly healthy, you can't even, your mind can't even go there.
Yeah.
And the anxiety that you feel when all of a sudden you recognize how fragile that is. Mm-hmm. Like I know for me, when that happened with my dad, my dad's like built like a freaking ox. And when we found out he had his cancer, that was just like, it was so earth shattering for how you understand the world and your place in the world and like what's going to happen. But it really was like you realize how you can adapt to things and you can become accustomed to the reality of things. And that doesn't mean you've betrayed yourself by becoming accustomed to that.
Okay, so if you're listening to this episode and feeling like, oh my gosh, I could actually really use a therapist, we've got you. My practice, Therapy for Women Center, has therapists licensed in 43 states across the country. All the therapists are hired by me, trained by me, handpicked by me, and we really back and support our therapists. We vouch for them, unlike some of these big online therapy platforms. Also, if you're local to the Philadelphia area, we have 3 office locations there. So I would love for you to go to our website, therapyforwomencenter.com, and check it out. Yeah, I think that's a really good point because I do think some people are like, the fact that I'm functioning means I don't love this person or means I don't care or anything like that. And that's not true.
No. And you're not weak. You're not weak because you're like, oh, I'm just going to go along with the flow. Like you have to.
Yeah.
There has to be a surrender to your truth and the reality of something in order for you to wake up in the morning and find some type of purpose from your life.
Well, it reminds me of if anyone, one of my favorite books is a book called Stumbling on Happiness. Have you heard of it?
No.
I feel like I've talked to you about it. It's by a man named Daniel Gilbert, who's just one of the absolute leading researchers on like human happiness. And it's an incredible book. It came out a long time ago, but it's still sort of like the book that everyone references. And one of the really fascinating things he did was he researches a lot like how people look back on their lives and what people regret, but also like what makes people happy and why. And one of the best examples he talks about, he pretty much just says from the research, people really, really underestimate their ability to handle things.
Yes.
Like when we imagine, if you interview parents about losing a child, mm-hmm. almost all of them say like, I will not survive.
Right.
I will maybe like end my life. Like I won't make it. And then you interview people who did lose a child, and people, for the most part, figure it out and do continue to live. And it's just so fascinating like how context dependent everything is. And even like he talks about, I don't know what the names of the famous conjoined twins that are alive. Do you know what I'm talking about? I feel
Is it the two girls? And they got married and they had a baby.
Yes. Yeah. He wrote this book, I think, like 15 years ago or something. So I'm sure that was before then. But yeah, he talks about how if you interview anyone, whether they would like to be conjoined to a sibling, people say, I would rather die.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't make it.
No.
Where if you interview them and you ask them, would you like to be separated? They're like, absolutely not. That would even if I could guarantee I would be healthy and amazing, like I don't want that. Why would I ever want that? And just like, again, how different, how your context and your perspective is shaped and how much we like the things we know for the most part and hate the things that we don't know and imagine things much, much worse a lot of times than they actually are.
Well, if I can tell you like a personal example with my brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
For most of you know, some of you might not. I have a brother who's severely disabled. He functions at about 2.5 years old is about his developmental capacity. He's 5'8". He's a big kid. He's in diapers. If it's not finger foods, we still have to feed him. You know, he has toddler-like tantrums and he can communicate, but he has difficulty communicating. And you sometimes have to take like quite a long time to listen to him repeating the same like to try to figure out what he's saying.
Yeah.
And he gets frustrated and he gets mad and all these sorts of things. And it's the impacts on our family and the ripple effects are something that we process every day as a family and talk about. And yet there were family dynamics that I saw, you know, through working at the hospital or through even hearing from clients and, you know, just life, hearing from friends and things that I remember thinking like, oh, I'd take my brother.
Yeah.
Like my brother is as hard as he is, he's predictable.
we know how to handle it.
We know what we're getting. We know the tips and tricks of how to deal with them. And some days it's fine. And some days it's really hard. And some days it's great. And, you know, seeing what some other people go through and the challenge and the difficulty and the depth of the struggle, I'm like, you know what? Like my brother's been really hard, but I'll take it.
Yeah.
And I think something that I've learned in processing like some of the big T and little T trauma that I've had with growing up with my brother is that he made me incredibly resilient. And I feel very lucky to kind of have been given an opportunity as a kid to build up that level of like mental resilience and flexibility. And I think a lot of people tried to tell me like how unfair that is. Like, well, that's unfair. Like you shouldn't have had to do that. You shouldn't need to do that. You shouldn't. Well, I did.
Yeah.
And you constantly telling me that I shouldn't have is kind of invalidating to my actual experience. Same thing like people will say to my parents all the time, like, I would never do that.
Yeah.
I would never care for my kid like that. And my dad's like, okay, I want you to look at your kid right now. And if something happened tomorrow and you had to be their full-time caregiver, you wouldn't do that? You wouldn't find a way to do that. Like, stop selling yourself short and stop putting me on a pedestal. Because when you put someone on a pedestal for something they've been through, it immediately makes them unapproachable. I've often felt that as someone who, when I'm trying to like talk to someone or like open up to them about things, I've had people be like, oh my God, you're a saint. I'm not a saint. Like, I've fucked up hard with this kid. Like, I've exploded in ways I'm not proud of. He's been mean to me. He's like, it's unfair the amount of tension that it took from me to him, from my parents. And we've had to be like so aggressively open as a family to cope with it and process it. Like, when you sit there and tell me I'm a saint, that tells me I'm not allowed to have struggled with this. You're not interested in hearing the anxiety that I've developed for this, or the way this has been really hard for me. You just dismiss it as like, oh, you're better than me, so thus we're moving on.
That is such a good perspective, and not one I've thought about before.
No. And that was a revelation that I made, because I couldn't figure out why I would get so anxious and upset and angry when people would tell me like what a good person I was.
Yeah.
Or how I'm such a saint, or I'm such a this. And I'm like, why are you othering me?
Yeah.
I'm no different than you. Like,
but you also didn't have a choice either.
No. Yeah, he was my brother. I was 2 and a half. Like, my parents didn't even know until the second he was born.
Yeah.
They thought he was a girl.
Yeah.
I thought Alexis was coming home. So I bring all that up to say, like, with anxiety, I'm not using myself as some, like, pillar of, like, oh, my God. Like, I've got it all figured out. Like, no, I don't. Trust me. However, I really invite you to, like, look at some of the situations in your life that – you feel you have a complex relationship with some of the things that you've survived and been through. Mm-hmm. And think of, like, what strengths do you want to pull from that? And allow yourself to, like, radically accept all of the mess of it. That there were things that were really hard, and there, you know, there are things that you still feel super anxious about, and there are things that you still struggle with, and, you know, the perseverative thoughts and the fight or flight mode and constantly feeling like you're being chased by a bear, even though you just have to send an email, right? Like, to think of the events in your life that brought you to that space and start thinking of, like, well, how am I better for it? Like, what can I deal with better actually than I give myself credit for? Like, and the fact that you're still showing up despite feeling that way, like, I know, hand to God, how exhausting that is to be so anxious and be so fearful and still showing up. Like, I think that is something that just does not get enough credit. That if you're talking about this, if you're being open about your anxiety, if you're trying to process it, you're in it.
Yeah.
And I think that that is such a incredible testament to who you are and what and the type of life that you want for yourself.
I think it's hard. It's something you and I talk about a lot, Sam, of like, how do we talk about hope and resilience and acknowledging yourself while also balancing and being sensitive to some people have been told they're resilient and amazing their whole lives and they just want to be able to be honest. And what is that line? And I think, you know, even in terms of meaning making, what we know that research says is that if you can create meaning out of the difficulties you've been through, you do tend to be better off. But right, it's never meaning that anyone else can give you. You have to choose the meaning for yourself and you have to be ready for it. And that's why telling someone everything happens for a reason, don't be sad, everything will be okay, think of how strong this is going to make you, is the exact opposite of anything you should ever say. But I agree with you. I think that that is one of the privileges of aging, to be honest. I mean, I think that it's so, you know, you imagine things that could happen to you and you would never want it. You would never pick it. But then you look back and if you can acknowledge how it shaped you, if, you know, I know for me, for example, I have been someone who has been riddled with anxiety about work, you know, having a practice and all of that. And then things were really difficult for a few years. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I had a lot of people leave the practice and I am so much more settled and like rock solid about the practice now because I've been through what I assumed would be the end of it for me and I stayed. I don't want to relive it. It was extremely difficult, but it does it, and it kind of brings it back to what I was saying about tolerance and even like some OCD stuff of a lot of times what we forget is anxiety, like avoidance makes anxiety much, much worse. And when you do things like rumination, like checking to make sure that you're a good person, like reassurance seeking from someone else. I mean, maybe we should do a whole episode on like mental compulsions because I think it would be a really good one. And it's something I've been exploring lately because my anxiety has more taken shape in terms of this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I get very borderline compulsive of checking our reviews, checking our downloads, checking to make sure people don't hate us, like all of that. And then the problem is when you do behaviors like that to get rid of your anxiety, because it does help. If you're like, okay, today no one has left us a terrible review.
Nobody hates us that we know of.
We feel better temporarily. I feel better temporarily, but it doesn't last forever because this podcast is ongoing and anyone can leave us another bad review at any time. And I hope I'm not coming across as, you know, I don't know, whiny or complaining or anything like that. But right, the hard part about these behaviors we do is when we check or we do something or we, right, we ask someone if they're mad at us.
Is this okay? Am I okay? Is this
yeah, fine? Or even like what? You mentally review what you did yesterday to see if I messed up and I said something wrong or whatever. That's a mental compulsion. You're checking internally, even if no one sees you do anything. It's very similar to if you have anxiety about, you know, contamination, washing your hands compulsively. You feel better temporarily, but unfortunately, it's a trap. It's never right. enough because you're existing in the world, so there will always be more germs, so you will need to wash your hands again. Just like with us, we're existing, we're making more podcasts, there will always be more people listening who will then potentially not like us. So instead of trying to eradicate your anxiety or avoid your anxiety, you have to start getting better at tolerating your anxiety, which means not doing some of these behaviors.
I'm pretty good at like just accepting the physical feelings of it.
You don't fight the like physiological
no
symptoms of anxiety.
When I have heart palpitations, I don't panic.
Yeah. But that is the key. So many people panic. That's what panic attacks literally are. Yeah. Is so many people go to the hospital. And I want to shout out to like our parents are the ones that go to the hospital thinking they have heart attacks when they're having panic attacks and because correct. They haven't acknowledged their anxiety for their correct. Entire life. So yes. good for you if you're listening to this podcast. That probably won't happen to you.
Yeah, exactly. You'll probably be fine. And I can usually like – I've gotten really good at connecting like why I'm feeling that way. Mm-hmm. And so I have like a pretty rapid fire process in my mind of being like, oh. Like for me, I get really anxious when I try to figure out how to – market something. Mm-hmm. I feel really inadequate in those moments. Mm-hmm. Like when we talk about like advertising the podcast or the Substack or like even things that I want to do. I've been noticing like I hit like a major block with that.
Yeah.
And so something that I've been doing to cope with that is I've just accepted that I do feel inadequate because this is new for me.
Yeah.
And I'm approaching this in a different way. And it's growing into much more of a business beyond just like, oh, I'm just simply like a content creator. And so I've been really working to like at the end of a long day of like clients or working on things or kind of like laying out a possible plan, I'll notice like sometimes I'll get some heart palpitations and I'll just be like, oh yeah, there they are.
Right. Thanks for sharing.
I'm tired. You're tired. Let's go to bed. Or I've noticed like the wave of dread that comes over me when I go to sit down to do something. I've been working really hard to like make my environment super friendly to like I put my phone on do not disturb. I close out like my social media apps. Sometimes I'll have music. Sometimes I won't. Like I'll – that kind of depends. And I just allow it to feel clunky. Like I just allow it to feel like it's not going to feel great. And that's okay. Because I noticed for a long time I was waiting for it to feel perfect.
Yeah.
Like I was like, no, like I should be so excited to do this. Or like I should be so ready. And it's like, no, like it's hard. It's scary. It's also like as the podcast grows, our exposure grows, right? As my accounts grow, my exposure grows. And you have to kind of like – adjust and adapt to that in being seen. And I'm someone who I have a lot of physical insecurities and I have a lot of like negative storylines around that and like what people think when they see me. And so something that I do is I just like I literally speak to those thoughts and I go, I know this is 14-year-old Sam's worst nightmare and that's okay. Like just, you know how good your content is. You know how much you trust your content. So just like let that be the thing.
Yeah.
and I just choose. I do it anyway. I think that's like my biggest thing across the board.
But it's like exposure work. Yes. You're exposing yourself to the thing you're scared of. And instead of letting that thought win, you're showing up and doing it anyway, which gives those thoughts less power.
Mm-hmm. And on the other end of the spectrum, there are some days where it's really strong.
Yeah.
And I've had to be kind to myself and say, you know what? On like a really client heavy day, that is not the creative day.
Yeah.
And to, you know, even allow me time to be like, no, I'm still allowed to rest. I can be building these things over here, doing this over here, and it will get built at the pace it gets built. Mm-hmm. And giving myself like that grace and that compassion to know like what my actual capacity is. Mm-hmm. Because just as you brought up in the beginning with like the over-functioning, right? Yep. I can really lean into over-functioner.
Yeah.
And part of that too is tied to my brother and caregiving for him. Yeah. Like you just have to, you have to continuously be going above and beyond what you actually want to do.
Yep.
And so I try to be like cognizant of that and just accepting there's no perfect balance. Some days are worse than others. Some days are really good.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just constantly moving that engine forward.
Yeah, I would say pretty similar to me. I think I tend to overreact in terms of like my biggest issue with anxiety is I have to like not be compulsive or impulsive. I can be very impulsive when my anxiety strikes. If something's happening, sometimes I just – my immediate response is like, I'm just going to fix it. I'm just going to do it. And I've really had to learn over the years, especially when it comes to managing people and managing situations and recognizing that just because someone else is having a crisis does not mean it's my crisis necessarily. Just because they're having a crisis doesn't mean that I – does it, even if I wanted to fix it immediately, doesn't mean it would be helpful or wise to just do the initial thought. So I feel like a lot of my work is distinguishing anxiety from you know, like what actually needs to happen, my values, because anxiety often is like it can do either, which is confusing, right? It can paralyze you or it can make you be like a horse and who got kicked and, you know, jump.
Just like plow in the fields.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that is sort of the balance and you have to kind of figure it out for yourself. And I think what's really hard that I want to tell people too, I think in this day and age, if you don't have opportunities to kind of push yourself to a bit of the limit, I think it is going to be hard for you to know what your true capacity is.
Oof.
Like I was thinking that too, Sam, as you were saying, because you were like, you know, I need to push myself. I need to show up. But I also have days where I'm like, I know what my limit is. And I think you know what your limit is because you have pushed yourself there.
Yeah.
And this is very nuanced. So
correct. Yeah, this is just – we are not saying go burn yourself out to see where your limit is. No. But
– and some of you, you know where your limit is. And this conversation is just for helping you on the other side.
Right,
But I think as we're always trying to challenge you all, we have to know ourselves. We have to know our patterns. If you are someone who is more of a – when things get hard, you're more of a runner. You get overwhelmed. You struggle in that sense, like that might be where there's an opportunity to push you or push yourself. And even, like I just think that that's what's interesting about capacity is there will be a real limit to what is possible.
Yeah.
But if you're not, if you haven't had a lot of experience knowing what that is, just like if we were getting like cyber bullied, I think that would be potentially our limit where we would like recontact, you know, I don't know what we would do, but there is a real limit. We're not just saying like nothing matters and you can tolerate anything like, you know, but the nuance I think is being able to tolerate enough and pushing yourself enough and knowing your goals, knowing what's important to you, and then also accepting things and being realistic.
An important caveat I want to add too is like, we're not just talking about like how life is miserable. Like the reason we're bringing this up about the podcast is because Amanda and I are obsessed with this podcast. Like we love it. Like we love doing it. We love building it. We love working on it. We love thinking about it for you. We're going through this struggle for a thing that is inherently good.
Yes.
Right? Yes, yes. Same thing if you're like working on repairing your relationship or your marriage. That is something.
Having a child.
Having a child.
Or starting a business.
Like starting a business, going back to school.
Like,
The variables here are endless, and it's not just saying like, oh, the only way to like learn how to go through bad things is to grieve somebody. Like mm-hmm. that was just an extreme example that helped me kind of like mm-hmm. lay out the groundwork for some of this. But all of these skills and tools are so that you can be living a fuller life, mm-hmm. so that your anxiety can exist within you and mm-hmm. you can still feel that you can go out and do the things that you want to do. And you mm-hmm. don't feel that you are being perpetually bullied by yeah. this inside voice that has mm-hmm. no business like making decisions for you. Mm-hmm. But we're so used to safety. We're used to giving in to that word. Mm-hmm.
I also think even, Sam, like I've been thinking about this a lot lately in terms of – and I've talked about this on the podcast of like my concerns about how things have become so frictionless and we do very little physically hard things. Not talking about like working out, but like cooking, right, is challenging for a lot of people if you want to like cook a nice meal or something. So one thing I've been trying to think about too is like where can I add good friction into my life instead of like being a psycho when I'm like running around returning packages and like I get like very psycho-y when I'm returning packages where I like, oh, I don't want to wait in line and I need to go to multiple places. And, you know, if there's like, I have to walk far away to the place, I get really annoyed. And, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, Amanda, go to UPS. If you have to park far away, it's fine. Wait in line. It's going to take an hour. Like what? Just like it does, stop it takes, trying to beat the system.
It takes what it takes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or even just like cook it, right? So like yeah. I also want to say that you can do some of this stuff and not sign up for a marathon or right. change careers or do something really big. I think you could be like, I love great food and I've always wanted to be a better cook and I'm going to start practicing learning how to cook.
Well,
we love you all. We hope this yep. was helpful. If you liked this episode, you should definitely go back and listen to our episode on – we did How to Actually Change where we talked about this too.
Yeah.
We also did an episode on the importance of discomfort, mm-hmm. which is pretty in alignment to this. Let us know if you want us to talk more about like intrusive thoughts. We also – if you have OCD or struggle with intrusive thoughts, Kimberly Quinlan came on and did an OCD episode with us.
Yep.
But as always, let us know – your thoughts. We're excited about Substack. We're working on getting a book club started.
Yeah.
We'd love to see you over there.
We have a pretty live chat going yeah. that we're going to start putting recommendations into of things that we're reading, things that we've seen, things that we've listened to. So we're very excited about that. And also, as per usual, please don't feel afraid to write us reviews now that we've told you about how much anxiety that brings to us. We love reading. I mean, 95% of everything that we receive is so positive and lovely. And we are so appreciative of all of you. And anything that you can do to rate, review, share, subscribe, send this episode to a friend if it felt very helpful for you. We just appreciate that so much. And that is how we are helping to grow. And we are on our way. And that is because of you. So thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.